Oh, hot diggity dog. It tells me we're live, and I say we because I am joined by the one, the only. How can I describe this man? A man of many hats, the owner of Packaday Podcast, writer, editor at Packer Report, an analyst for Green Bay Nation and Pro Football Network 365, an NFL Scout School graduate, and a guest on WDUZ and Sports Sleep 1055. I'm going to run out of breath saying all these things you do, Andy. It's Andy Herman. Andy, let's talk some football. How the hell are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Did you start with a hot diggity? Hot diggity dog?
You better believe it. Fantastic.
Hot diggity dog. Thank you for that intro. I appreciate it.
I tell you what, I brought back hot diggity dog after I saw the news that they are reimagining, relaunching Ren and Stimpy. Because one of my favorite moments ever in Ren and Stimpy is when the dog catcher kills the dog, or there's some like roadkill that is a dog, and he jumps out of his truck and he says, "Hot diggity dog, I filled my quota," and then he drives off. So I'm bringing back hot diggity dog for that reason only. Absolutely. So, well, I got to give a shout out to New York Cheesehead, first of all. Thank you for the super chat. I'll probably hit most super chats at the end of our conversation here, but did want to give you a shout out because you say you're a first timer. Love your stuff. No bars in New York. No Packers telecast. You're lost, buddy. The internet is your friend. That's all I can say. All right, Andy, you and I, most days, been sitting up there in the stands at Nischke Field a few times in Lambeau. You were in Lambeau yesterday. Give me the 30,000-foot view that you have of this team. Is there anything that you've seen this summer that maybe has changed your conception of what you thought this team would be heading into 2020? With the caveat, obviously, being we didn't have an offseason. They are very much hitting the ground running, and it's probably going to show up early in the season. But long-term, what are you thinking about this team now that you've seen them on the field for a couple weeks?
Yeah, I'm glad you put that caveat in there because, you know, it's tough enough this time of year to get a gauge on things when you actually have preseason games. It's right. That much tougher when you don't. But, you know, I thought they've done a good job with team activities and, you know, so that we have some ability to see some of this stuff and obviously more for their benefit. But, you know, here's been my biggest takeaway so far. I kind of went into the season or, you know, this offseason feeling like, all right, they go get Funchess, they get a Rick Wagner, they get a Christian Kirksey, they filled kind of a couple of these stop gaps. The draft had some ebbs and flows to it that have been discussed. Yeah, that's one way to put it. So I didn't know 100% what to expect. There's, of course, I think you're going to be having a friendly conversation coming up on this that maybe you can plug in a little bit. But some analytics folks that maybe, weren't such a fan of what the Packers accomplished a season ago.
Later tonight, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Here's my takeaway so far. I look at this team and I compare it to a season ago, and I'm not 100% convinced that they're not better at every single position group now than they were a season ago. I feel like Rodgers looks sharper. Boyle looks sharper at quarterback. Jamal Williams looks a step better, a good step better than
he
did.
It's striking. Exactly. How fluid Jamal Williams looks, right?
He's very spry. Yeah. Then he had an AJ Dillon. You know, at wide receiver, I'm not going to divulge a ton of things that they're going into for obvious reasons, but some exciting things that they're doing. I think MVS has taken a potential step, although I've been hesitant to say that. I don't know that tight end has jumped the way that I expected it to, but I still think it's better than what they got out of Jimmy Graham a season ago. I think the offensive line's the interesting one. So, of course, there's the hit from Brian Bulaga, but, man, does Lane Taylor look really good. I think Lindsley can be the same. I think Bakhtiari can even be better. He's looked fantastic. I think Elton Jenkins can take a step up. I think those, you know, four other spots legitimately could be as good or if not better. And I think the right tackle spot may not be as bad as maybe expected. I think, you know, Kenny Clark, that defensive line, Kingsley Kiki's taking a jump. Inside linebacker looks exceptionally better. The corners look good. The safeties look good. I'm not sold that there's not a position that this team hasn't at least stayed the same, if not gotten better at, which is very encouraging.
Yeah. And you got to think it's a bit of a surprise because all summer, I know we've talked about ad nauseum, whether it's online, you've been on here a couple times, and it's very much been, at least the narrative has kind of grown throughout the offseason because of the draft and because of a general lack of activity, so to speak, around the team, that things like corner because of the loss of Tremont Williams and you have a lot of youth there, or inside backer, because I think there were a lot of question marks about, you know, Kirksey, obviously his old film looks good, but can he stay healthy? And we still got to start hitting live stuff in a couple of weeks. So who knows? But I think to me, the surprise at camp has been Kamal Martin, because I saw his college tape, and you can always kind of have to take that with a grain of salt, obviously, but he has been way more physical than I expected. I thought they'd get a sideline to sideline guy, somebody who could maybe be disruptive, a ball hawk, what have you. But his physicality has really surprised me. What's been your take on Martin?
Best rookie in camp, in my opinion. I think he's been fantastic. Again, this is another one of those players where really want to see what it looks like on Sundays, because especially when, you know, teams start to, you know, get inside linebackers, you know, one-on-one with Christian McCaffrey's and George Kittle's and et cetera, that's when, as an inside linebacker, you kind of figure out what you have. But he has answered every, you know, question that I had had going in up until this point. And that's all he, you know, all you can do is, you know, practice well, and hopefully that it carries over into Sundays. Instincts have been good. Yesterday at Lambeau, he had a really nice play. I think one of the toughest things for inside linebackers in general, whether you're a rookie or a 10-year vet, is to toe the line between being aggressive and shooting a gap and holding back and waiting for the play to develop. And yesterday,
reading your keys, not taking false steps.
And you know, Dexter Williams cut back on a play, and he easily could have shot forward. And if he would, if there would have been a cutback, Williams would have had a huge gap. He kind of read everything perfectly. He stayed patient and was right. Williams cut back right into Kamal Martin. And then at the same time, there've been a handful of plays throughout camp where you see him shoot the gap, tackle for loss. There was the, I think you were there that day when they did the first,
The very first young guy session. Tackle. And he had that hit that literally everybody, whether it was us in the stands with the media, whether it was the vets on the other side, everybody was like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, it was visceral. It was such a good hit. And he came up howling. Yeah, that was kind of where I was like, wait a second. Yeah. That was literally the first time they had done any kind of contact, take to the ground. And it was noticeable. It was a very physical play that, again, for Martin, for me, that was one of the question marks coming in. Yeah. Let's talk about the quarterback position, because obviously so much was made this offseason. And now my co-founder has caused waves because he started attacking somebody on Twitter. Attacking. He's Corey Banky. You got to take all of that with a grain of salt. But you look at the selection of Jordan Love. He has looked like a rookie. He has looked like he's swimming. He has, I would say, improved a bit. And I know Matt came out yesterday and said it was his best practice at camp. You were there. You can give us the yay or nay on that. To me, he has certainly looked a little better each and every time he's taken the field. But anybody thinking that this was anything other than a project, and or that he was going to be the number three guy without an offseason, without any work on a field until, 11, 12 days ago, I think it was kind of fooling themselves.
I agree. And, you know, it's been an interesting offseason, of course, for Jordan Love, with not having the OTAs, the rookie mini camps. And this was a quarterback that, when selected to a T, everyone said, great, he gets a few years to develop under Rodgers. It's going to take 2 to 3 years. So you take a developmental quarterback, and now you take away the functionality of a regular offseason, and you take his first days in training camp, you're looking at a player who's dropping back under center for the first time in a couple of years.
It's crazy, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you're getting you're trying to get your drops right. You're trying to get your reads right, understanding a playbook, understanding a cadence, just everything that I can't even imagine the things that are swimming through his head. And what's the worst thing that you can, and Matt LaFleur's made mention of it, that he's thinking of? The worst thing you can do is be thinking and not just reacting and throwing the football, because then all of your just normal instincts, those don't take over, because you're there's a million things going through your mind. So the thing, I mentioned this on the radio last week, I mentioned on the podcast yesterday, or for today's show, the one thing we found out about Jordan Love is the thing that we expected. If there was any belief that this could be maybe a Deshaun Watson situation where all of a sudden he came in, or a Russell Wilson situation and he came in and he was ready to play right away, and you know, now what do we do? That's not the case, and that's okay. That's what we expected. He's not exceeding expectations. I don't know that he is below expectations. I think this is just a project quarterback who's in a new system. And this is kind of what it's going to be for probably the majority, or for all of this year, you would think.
So I'm going to go, because a couple people are asking questions here, and I want to get to the live folks here tuning in on Cheesehead TV. First of all, Manuel, hi guys, regards from Mexico. Hope you're doing okay. I'm doing okay. Are you doing okay, Andy? How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Doing great. That's awesome. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
Manuel. Glad to hear. I'm glad to hear it. Andrew asks, this is our year, boys. I like it. I like the confidence. Thank you so much for all that you both do. During this run to number 14, obviously referencing championship number 14, other than Lazard, who needs to go off? And I will let you define go off however you will, Mr. Herman.
Aaron Rodgers needs to go off.
I like the way you think.
This is a similar Aaron Rodgers we've seen for the last few seasons. And when Aaron Rodgers is on fire, Aaron Rodgers, you can win every game. You're an automatic playoff team. Yep. You have a puncher's chance at a Super Bowl every single year. And even yesterday, I found it interesting yesterday. He got a lot of praise because he looked sharp. There's no question about it. He looked sharp. But if you looked at the numbers that I forget which beat writer, and I wish I could give them credit. I apologize. I don't know if you know Aaron off the top of your head. But one of the beat writers put together numbers that ended up being like 22 of 20 or 28. Eight.
It was like 26 of 28, I think. It looked really efficient.
It's something around there. Anyway.
Right.
It was like 26 to 32 for 190 yards, one or two touchdowns, no interceptions. And that's been a very Aaron Rodgers line where it takes 30 some passes to get to 190 yards. But right. You look at it, it's two touchdowns, it's no interceptions. He looks sharp on the field. He's not making mistakes. But you look at, I'm not comparing Aaron Rodgers to Tim Boyle, but Tim Boyle, lesser players.
You would love to, though. No, I'm kidding.
I do. 10 plus yards per attempt. You look at some of the best quarterbacks in the league, it's 9, 10, 11, 12 yards per attempt. Right. And Rodgers is around that 6 to 7 yard mark. I want to see Rodgers gun it. I want to see him almost play like he's got a free play.
Well, what's kind of fun, on every down. I know. And that's kind of been the conversation for years. But yep. The thing that's interesting to me is if you remember that day, there was one day, and then we got to talk to Aaron right after it because he mentioned getting that text from LaFleur late at night. And then they tried a couple of the concepts that they had kind of drawn up, so to speak, and they hit them for big gains. And that was the day where like he went to deep to Devontae like five times. And I think he connected four times out of the five. And it was the one day this entire summer where he really ripped it down the field. And I do wonder how much of that is he's Aaron Rodgers. He knows he's Aaron Rodgers. He can do whatever's asked of him. He knows the playbook at this point, and he's really working the installs. Because to me, it did, as you mentioned, he has looked a lot sharper this last kind of week and a half. And for me, I just think my guess, and this is complete guesswork on my part on the outside, is that he has been maybe not asked to, but is trying to be more efficient and trying to work on some of that play action stuff we saw with MVS over the middle. We saw him hit Tanyan and DeGuara over the middle a couple of times on plays where last year he was a little hesitant. Play action was really hit and miss for them last year. Yep. That has looked a lot more efficient. And if they can get that going, then that opens everything else up. So for me, I've kind of looked at it like he's trying to get every aspect of the offense down, knowing he can push it downfield whenever he needs to. He's Aaron fucking Rodgers. But with Boyle, I see a guy who has total command of the offense and wants to show and prove to the team, hey, you drafted this guy. I know my role. I'm going to show you how good I can be, how I can drive it down the field. And again, this is just complete guesswork on our part, but that's what I saw this summer.
Yeah, I think that very well could be. I hope that's the case. That'd be great. And I hope he comes out, week one and through the rest of the season and just rips it.
Week one especially, because it's always good to rub it in Vikings fans' faces. Yeah,
absolutely. We'll leave it at that. That's a good place to end it.
All right. Jitsu asks, Wes reported MVS is adding more to his game than being just a deep threat. More of a chain mover stuff. You love to see it. Thanks for all you both do. Jitsu, thank you. I mean, you try not to make sweeping proclamations off a training camp, especially one where there's been no preseason games. But man, MVS has looked legit. Yeah. I don't think there's any other way to put it.
Yeah, I tweeted out yesterday. I've been hesitant to say it because we've been here for the last couple of years with MVS.
Exactly.
There might be something there by the end of the season. He ends up on the bench, unfortunately, both of the last two seasons under two different coaching staff. So I'm hesitant to get,
too crazy about it. Yeah.
Exactly. But you see the little things that he's doing differently. This is not just a receiver that's on the outside running nine routes and trying to get open using his speed and athleticism. There's more nuance to his routes. His hands have looked fantastic. His hands look strong. Just fucking the ball out of the air. Yesterday he had three completions. All three went for first downs. That's that chain moving stuff that Wes was talking about. So if he starts, getting that stuff down, Jordy was so fantastic in the fact that you had to defend him against everything.
The little quick routes, the slants,
the hitch, the little out routes, and then corners are then trying to play up that. And then all of a sudden he would streak right by you. Imagine if MVS gets some of those little intricacies. I'm not comparing MVS to Jordy. I'm not saying that, but if he can just get some of those little intricacies down where he is a threat on some of those short and intermediate routes where the corners actually have to honor those sort of things. Now all of a sudden they're honoring that, and he puts the Jets on. It's exciting to think about. I'm not there yet, but it's been exciting.
Well, and it also alters how defensive coordinators go about trying to defend the offense. Because if you noticed last year, at some point, probably about halfway through, right up through, I want to say when he dropped off the map after the Chicago game where he missed that opener, you know, teams started not even caring as far as their personnel matchups. They would literally, if he was inside, because they love to use him on the interior and then run him on an over route.
Yep.
Because it was either he was going to go that deep post or he was going to run the deep over. They would just have a linebacker take him. They would literally play some kind of matchup zone. And if MVS was coming over the middle, for the, after like the Raider game, basically, it was, okay, if MVS is in there, we don't need to go nickel. Well, most people are nickel, but we don't need to go dime. We don't need an extra DB. We'll just have a, you know, a trailing, a middle linebacker take him. And to me, if he starts making teams pay for that, then teams are going to have to counter with more defensive backs. They're going to have to adjust their personnel. And then Aaron Jones can cook and the running game keep going a little bit more. So I think he, while maybe not having a monster season, I don't want to get fantasy fans excited as far as production goes and numbers wise, but man, he could be a real key to opening up the offense, so to speak.
He's one of those players that we can go over a lot of them, but he's one of those players that just looks better. Is this a, you know, 80 catch, 1,000 yard, 10 touchdown better? No, but he's better than he was a season ago. And kind of what I was mentioning at the onset, I think there's a lot of those on this team who maybe not a huge step better, but incrementally better. And I think that's going to help.
Well, let's talk about that offensive line. You mentioned it a little bit ago when you were giving your overview. What do you think of this quote unquote competition at right tackle? Because to me, how in the hell does Wagner step in here in three practices and claim the starting job after Turner's been there for 2 weeks and probably looked better than Wagner did at the outset of camp?
Yeah, I get to be super wrong on this one because I did not think that this was going to be a competition at all. In my bold predictions and just in my predictions in general, I thought Wagner was going to run away with the right tackle spot. I think
most people did. Yeah,
I didn't no think doubt. Turner had the foot speed to play outside at right tackle. And I'm happily wrong on this one. I think Billy Turner's had a really nice camp, quietly a really nice camp. You don't see any egregious plays. I think he's been consistent. You know,
I don't know. I've seen one or two. There have been Preston's gotten them a couple times. I still worry about speed off the edge with Billy, but I worry about it with everybody. So
No, that's a million percent. And when I went back and when he signed last year, I went back and graded his full season at Denver, and he played half the season at tackle, half the season at guard, graded well at guard, graded poorly at tackle. There was one game that just completely tanked his entire grade. Ford just destroyed him.
Ford's
first step quickness, he had no answer. So yeah, you look at Yannick Ngakoue coming into Minnesota, first step quickness, Smith in practice. No, there's going to be struggles. I'm not saying there's not, but
he's much better than I thought he was going to be. I'll agree with you there.
Exactly.
No question about it. I think it's going to be interesting what they do. I put this out there on Twitter. I'd love to get your take on this, because for all the love that Lane Taylor is getting, they did, you know, obviously restructure his contract this offseason. So now he's pretty dirt cheap comparatively to most starting guards in the league. He's got experience at a bunch of different positions. Hell, he's played left tackle for the Packers at a pretty damn good level. I got to think if there's a team like Philly, which has suffered a ton of injuries across the offensive line in the last couple of days, if they give a call and say, hey, can we flip you a pick for Lane? I got to think Gutekunst is listening, especially but with the caveat obviously being that Wagner balls out the next 3 days and shows that he's capable of taking the right tackle spot.
Yes, I saw this, and I'm glad you brought it up because I was going to bring it up because I take umbrage with your points.
Umbrage, sir. Andy is taking umbrage.
No.
Umbrage away.
I think it's an interesting concept. Here's my thought process on it. So what's the most that a team is going to give up for Lane Taylor? Like
more than a day three pick.
Yeah, like a fifth round pick, maybe, probably sixth round pick. Mm. And I just think with him not making a ton of money, I just think he has a lot more value to Green Bay in a season where I think depth is going to play a major part and where I think he's playing really well and looks like a really solid, you know, starting guard potentially, especially with the fact that Rick Wagner's already been banged up and you have next to nothing as far as backup at the tackle positions. If you would trade
him, he gives you. Yeah,
exactly. Which he gives you depth everywhere. I see your point and I can understand the logic of it. And if they felt you know, listen, if they feel great about Wagner, if they feel great about like a Lucas Patrick as an interior.
I was just going to say, and that to me says, it would say more about how they feel about their interior guys, which, yep. you know, we talked all summer about there's kind of a glut there as far as yep. they have signed Patrick. They do have Turner who can play. They have Lane who can play. And then they have Patrick who can play. I mean, that at some point, maybe you think about, you know, the long-term future. Is Lane that answer? I don't know. I mean, they, like I said, they literally just re-signed Patrick. So it's just, they're just something I threw out there. Maybe they get a call. Maybe they go down that road. I tend to doubt it. I agree with you. I think he's more valuable in the building, but you can't. Really, I know. And I love it. We've already got three comments. Keep Lane, trade Turner. I don't think anybody's trading for Turner's contract. That's my point. You know what I mean? Because you see Lane Taylor, you see a bargain, somebody you would easily give up a pick for. I can't imagine a team giving up a pick for Billy Turner's contract, but that's just me. Okay, let's talk about this cornerback group, because I still get at least once a day, and I got to admit, I was a little nervous before I came into camp. Are they going to bring back Tremont Williams? I get it literally every day. And I have said all offseason that I would love to have him back as a fan, but I understand where the front office is coming from as far as believing in their young talent. It's a young man's game. At some point, you got to get these guys on the field. And like I said, prior to camp, I was a little okay. But after watching Chandon Sullivan, Josh Jackson, some of these young guys, Samuels, the undrafted kid, I'm kind of down with it, man. I'm kind of okay with not bringing back Tremont. As much as it sucks to say that, yeah. Chandon Sullivan specifically has got me really excited.
Yeah, a lot of things there. So one, and I know Tremont in an interview he did, I think it was with Wildy, basically said, you know, he's had some opportunity, but it is stupid that he's not on a team right now, whether it's Green Bay or anywhere else. You want guys like that in your locker room. I don't care if he plays a single snap. And I know people will say, well, that's what you have coaches for and things like that.
Right.
That dude is a dude in the locker room. And
everybody says it. And every guy in the locker room says it.
And even if not that, then pay the dude to be an assistant cornerback coach and get him in the locker room. Like, whatever you need to do, he should be in a locker room right now in some capacity. He's still good enough to play in this league. So that's number one. Number two is that the longer he's not, the bigger a benefit this is to Green Bay. If you can have a Tremont Williams that's just on the street.
On speed dial, yep.
A phone call away at any given time should somebody get hurt.
That's what I thought when he said that on Wildy's show is, like, if he's had opportunities – or at least conversations with other teams, I got to imagine he has had a conversation with the Packers. He has said he's talked to the Packers. I got to think they have said, if there are injuries, we are going to give you a call.
Yeah.
And he loves it in Green Bay. His family loves it there. I got to think that plays at least a little role here.
Yeah. So there's that. And then the last point that you made, I love Chandon Sullivan, and I think he's even taken a step from last year. He was so good on the field last year. Going back all the way to training camp, the dude made a play a day just to get him his name in the conversation to make the team. Then the last preseason game last year, he plays safety just so he can show his versatility. Gets in the game against Dallas, very first game, big interception. Never, you know, nary a bad play on tape for the most part, and then comes in, and I think he's been, you know, you can't say physical because he's not out there tackling, but every single run to his side, he's right there ready to fill in. I'm so impressed with him. And yesterday there was a pass completed against Davante Adams. He was in coverage, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. You were at a couple practices. I wasn't, but that was like the first time I remember in team activities where there was a completion of any sort in his area. I'm sure there were a couple others.
They were few and far between.
Absolutely.
You know, like, you look, it's funny too, because like that brings up a good point. Cause I want to talk a little bit about this. You know, I've obviously been pretty bullish on Josh Jackson in this camp. And I know Matt Schneidman wrote something for The Athletic where he had him on the slide or whatever mechanism he used for the piece of content, you know, and I know people were going back and forth about, oh, he looks like, and I think you said, like, he looks like Josh Jackson. Like, he's broken some up. He's grabbed a little, blah, 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 blah. To me, what gets missed a lot of times in camp coverage is, you know, you kind of glom all this stuff together as far as individual one-on-one reps, drill work, and team stuff.
Yeah.
Myself, I'm always going to be 1,000% more interested and kind of talk about the team stuff. And, you know, the drill work is fine. Like, I've got people on here talking about, oh, Lane Taylor's won all 15 of his one-on-ones. I don't care.
Yeah.
I literally don't care. It's nice. It's great to talk about and keep track of, but ultimately in the game of football, especially in the offensive line, but anywhere on the field, you are playing to leverage. You are playing to coverage. You are playing in a scheme with teammates. So like when I look at the coverage of Josh, and has he been great? No. Has he been much better than I remember him being any of the previous summers in Green Bay? Absolutely. And I'm very interested to see what kind of combination they use, because like you talked about Chandon, he's obviously that slot guy. I mean, you obviously want him in there, in that nickel role in the slot. Josh has been running predominantly on the outside. For a guy in Pettin who likes to use, as we know, those that dime personnel group so much, it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of juggle all these guys. Because I think at some point, teams are going to try to attack these younger. They're going to get as many wide receivers on the field specifically so they can try and match up with some of these younger guys to test them, at least early on.
I hope so, because I would much rather have teams try to test the pass with the front pass rush group than I probably would see a Mike Shanahan offense lining up with, you know, power personnel for 60 plays a game again. But you know, to your point, I do think that there's, you know, going to be some questions that need to be answered. And to your earlier point, you know, not only do those one-on-ones, you know, not matter because of all the reasons that you mentioned, but through that and through the team activities, this is also practice. They are working on specific techniques and trying out different stuff and seeing what works. And Josh Jackson might play off on a play to see, all right, what could I do in off coverage on this play? All right, now I'm going to go and press on this play. He might be doing things that aren't his forte because he wants a little bit of work on them, or he wants to try something
different. Because Jerry Gray has yelled at him to do it. My God, I love Jerry Gray. Oh, my God.
I don't know how Minnesota let him out.
It's got to be something personal between him and Zimmer. It's got to be. I can't imagine why that kind of coach would be allowed to leave. But
I think Gray was just very upset with how Mike Zimmer shook Matt LaFleur's hand at the end of the game last year. And he said, you know what?
I want to go to the organization.
I'm going to Matt. I'm on his side.
All right. We've had a couple of questions. And I'm talking to Andy Herman. He's an absolute legend for sticking with me here. I have a few more questions for you, Andy. First of all, I wanted to get to somebody asked it really well. Where is it? I can't find the exact question, but I will kind of paraphrase it. Can you talk personnel versus scheme to fix the run defense? This is something I've talked about a lot in my daily chats. To me, the quickest way for them to fix the run defense is for Mike Pettin to get more aggressive on early downs. Your thoughts?
I agree. And again, this, we can't touch too much on scheme, unfortunately. Right. He's put some interesting formations out on the field, I'll say that, which have my interest very much piqued on how they're going to do some things.
Right.
There's both, right? I absolutely believe that there were times that Mike Pettin got out-schemed last season. I think Philadelphia and San Francisco are great examples of that. I think there's also times where he just was outmanned as well. And, you know, it's interesting because they didn't add a ton across that defensive line. Trayvon Hester has not done anything in camp. And I know he was just a rookie vet guy and he was out yesterday in practice, minimum vet guy, excuse me. But, you know, he's not done anything to show that he is a potential player in that regards. But I think what they did at the inside linebacker group, both drafting Kamal Martin and going out and getting Christian Kirksey, I think is going to be a major impact for run defense. And then I just think that they're going to be a lot smarter from a scheme standpoint, being more aggressive, as you mentioned, and also just getting a little bit more size on the field without me going into too many specific details.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to kick it there. Andy, I can't thank you enough for hanging with me. Thanks to everyone for joining me. You can catch Andy at Pack a Day Podcast and a million other places, as I said at the top. Andy, thanks so much, buddy.
Take it easy.
I'll see you around the beat.
Sounds great. Thanks, man.
Take it easy.